Senate Judiciary Committee, Monday, May 27th, 1991.
Chair, apologize for being late. We had a longer than usual agenda and rules. We have House Bill 2258 back before us. We need to add an emergency clause to make sure that we conform with what the Ways and Means Committee has done with respect to their budget. So the chair would move reconsideration of House Bill 2258.
It doesn't delete page one.
And we need to a chair would move the dash three amendment. Are there objections to the amendment? Hearing none, so ordered. Thank you. Then the chair would move House Bill 2258 back to the floor with a due pass recommendation. This is the...
Going to go to Ways and Means?
No, it's been... Ways and Means actually did their budget reporting with the understanding we had a letter from Representative... Jones saying that we could make the adjustments in this bill and they'll catch it across the way, and as long as it's done, they're happy, I think.
Okay.
Okay. Call the roll, please, Mark.
Senator Brockman.
Aye.
Senator Bunn.
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker.
Aye.
Senator Springer.
Aye.
Chair Cohen.
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you very much. Senator Springer, you want to do your 3-9?
No, we don't.
You need to have me here.
Or Hill.
Oh, Hill. They'll come shortly. Okay. Hospital 2127. Bill, that's
sure.
Our membership, campground membership,
I have
Bill.
Amendments, dash 4 and dash 5 were passed out the last meeting, but I'll pass them out again in case...
Great. Thank you. You're getting good. Smart. We're getting this time of the session.
I got them. This isn't the minimum wage one.
Madam Chair, this bill was last before the committee on May 22nd, and it's brought to us by the real estate agency, Oregon Real Estate Agency. And the bill would create overview by the real estate agency. The dash 4 amendments come from the real estate agency, and it were amendments that were agreed to with the industry. And the main thing that they do is, in the original bill, a person after the effective date of this bill buying interest in a campground would receive a interest in the real property. And it turns out that would have probably brought the industry to a standstill. It would have created two different classes of memberships and also would have made financing of campgrounds virtually impossible. But what the agency has done in it, has strengthened the non-disturbance agreements that must be filed in the real property records, which would require campground operators that to take over a campground after it were to go, say, into receivership to notify the real property agency, and also to give any persons that owned an interest in the campground prior to it going to receivership the right to at least buy into the campground with the new owner at a price no worse than what would be offered to anyone else. The dash 5 amendments come from Mr. Cooler, and when I originally looked at these amendments last time, I thought that they were overly broad, but when I looked at them again, going to page 7 of the bill, of the B. Engrossed bill on line 16, what these amendments would do would be to basically say that it would exempt membership records from disclosure, and that's what Mr. Cooler, on behalf of his client, I believe, a campground down around Lincoln City was concerned about the fact that the membership lists could be subject to public disclosure by the fact that they had to be supplied to the real estate agency. And I believe that Stan Mayfield for the real estate agency spoke in opposition to this amendment.
I guess we need to look at the B enclosed bill to make sure that it's narrowed only to membership lists, so you need to guide us to that place.
Sure. On page 7 of the B enclosed bill, line 16, it reads 15 and 16, records of the sale of membership camp contracts shall be subject to inspection by the commissioner or the commissioner's authorized representative. And then it would be inserted after that, any such records, copies thereof, or information obtained by the commissioner.
But you're still, you get any such contracts.
Sure, and I any such records, I guess, would refer back to the sale of membership camping contracts.
Well, the pleasure of the committee. I'm not sure that it really does. It talks about all of those records. Yeah. Talks about everything there. So you want to redo this again?
Maybe for any such records of membership lists. Maybe if we qualified it that way.
Well, I'd like you to take it down to the Legislative Council and work on it some more then. Let's just set this aside for now. Meantime, committee members, I guess I'd ask you do you want to go ahead and qualify the memberships at all under the open records law? The agency wasn't inclined. Other people thought the membership list should be remain confidential. So
I think it should. I think we heard testimony about these so-called unscrupulous competitors going in and ravaging these people's membership in order to solicit them for their
Then let's get Bill to go down and make it explicit, please, not just sort of floating in there, and explicit to membership lists rather than the trademark secrets or whatever. I think we don't need all of those kind of discussions. Okay, let's set that. We'll bring it back as soon as we get ready. Okay, then let's have House Bill. Let's see what our sign-up sheets are. Gail Shibley here. Gail isn't here. 30. We could take up 3165. It's next on the list. Mr. Marquis is here. On that bill, modifies the definition of debt collector, 3165.
Well, he was here.
Is he outside? Nope, can't find him. Okay, well, let's move on then to who's here on 2019, Ross Laburn is here, Department of Justice. Let's go ahead and do that one. Welcome, Ross. We'll get.
Good Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ross Laburn. I'm Assistant Attorney General here today representing the Oregon Department of Justice in support of House Bill 2019. I also serve as a member of the Board of Directors of the National Association of State Charity Officials. And in that capacity, I've been involved over the last several years with some of my colleagues in attempting to work on, from time to time, a model State Charitable Solicitation Act. By way of background, historically in this country, most of the money that has found its way from the private sector into charities has largely been given, at least in days past, by wealthy individuals, principally in the form of money through charitable trusts. In the last couple of decades, that has changed significantly, so that much of the money is now contributed by a vast cross-section of our population, much of it in response to charitable solicitations. There's a tremendous competition for the charitable dollar out there today, and increasingly, charities have turned to professionals to help them reap some of those funds for their own organizations. The state, historically, in attempting to regulate the process of charitable solicitations, I think has been moved by a couple of interests. One, that those solicitations be free from fraud and deception. And number two, that the money be raised as efficiently as possible so that as much of that charitable dollar from the donor reaches the charity or for use in its charitable program. In 1985, this legislature adopted a new Charitable Solicitations Act. And as what was going on in many states, there was a recognition that it was time to regulate these professionals. One of the reasons was because we were hearing more and more situations where these professionals ended up with the lion's share of the money. Today, I'm here to tell you that 2019 is simply attempts to tinker with and fine-tune that act that was passed in 1985. Since that time, we've been faced with, number one, constitutional problems in terms of free speech analysis. Number two, frankly, as regulators, we've just had more experience in regulating professionals. We realize that there are different classes of professionals and they ought to be regulated differently. So, principally, what 2019 attempts to do is address the fact that there ought to be, in our minds, two major classes of professional fundraisers, one that we now call commercial fundraising firms, the second one that will continue to be known as professional fundraising firms. House Bill 2019, the engrossed version that you have before you, includes amendments that were offered by the Department of Justice in the House in response to comments that we received from two national associations of professional fundraising counsel. And I think that I'll conclude my remarks by telling you that's pretty much what House Bill 2019 attempts to do, except I'd like to identify for you one other policy decision or issue that's addressed in 2019. And that is that as we regulated charitable solicitations in 1985 and began to regulate professionals, the question came up of, well, what about professionals that solicit on behalf of other nonprofit enterprises such as political solicitations, in particular solicitations on behalf of political candidates, political measures, and political committees. It was the judgment of the 1985 legislature that those solicitations should be removed from the regulation under the Charitable Solicitation Act. The Department of Justice agrees with that decision. We believe that was a wise policy choice. However, what has come to our attention over the last 6 years is that there are some limited number of instances where political committees have been formed and that a major portion of the solicitation presentation on behalf of those political committees has had a decidedly charitable intent. And that comes in one of two different ways. One, a representation that money raised by this political committee will be given over to another charity, or number two, that they sell tickets to entertainment events and represent that the tickets can be given back to the professional who will then distribute them to disadvantaged individuals through charities. We have in on page 2 of the bill, in the definition of solicitation, you will see that we've included language which would take those particular situations and put that kind of activity back in under the Charitable Solicitation Act. And so that's the one other thing that, House Bill 2019 attempts to do. With that, I'll conclude my remarks and answer any questions of the committee.
Thank you. Are there questions for Ross? You're finished with amending this bill, is that it?
That's correct.
Well, I sort of wait and hold them for a few days to make sure the people haven't had some found something they want to attach as we move through this process. But you're satisfied that this does what you say it does. Okay, are there questions for Ross? Bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee. Ross, so in a situation where a campaign were to sell tickets to a fundraiser and the person who were to buy them were to pay for the tickets and tell the campaign they weren't going to the fundraiser, the committee could still, say, give those tickets to campaign workers so that they'd have a crowd at the fundraiser. Is that correct? Without falling within the definition of this act.
That's correct.
Thanks.
That's correct.
You want to follow up on that?
That's fine. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you. How does the committee feel about this bill? Do you want to look at it some more? Are you ready to move it?
Nothing more is going to be done to it, is
nothing
it?
Nothing more, as far as I know.
Well, I'd move it if I understood it a little better.
Well, we can, if you think waiting will help.
No, I don't.
If waiting will help,
no end of sitting around looking at it's going to change anything. So then I will move House Bill 2019 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Brockman moves House Bill 2019 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Call the roll, please.
Senator Brockman.
Aye.
Senator Bunn.
Aye.
Senator Springer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hill.
Aye.
Chair Cohen.
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you very much. Okay, let's go back then. Senator Springer?
Well, I think we're ready on 389, Madam Chair. Got a lot of folks who took the day off to come down and join us.
You mean the members of the committee?
Yeah, right. Madam Chair, I think you should have a re-engrossed version of the bill. This incorporates amendments which have been adopted earlier and I believe include or should include some technical amendments relating to the statutory reference that was identified by our committee counsel. And whenever you're ready to accept a motion on the bill, I would move it as amended. I know that there is a concern about fiscal impact. I've talked with Mr. Linden this morning, and he advised me that he would reevaluate the fiscal impact to see if it was correct in its assumption, since it's pretty steep from the Judicial Department. If we could allow this to go to the President's desk, and I could advise him whether or not I've been successful in getting a revised fiscal impact statement, maybe we can get the Senate President to let this go over to the House side for their consideration before it goes down to Ways and Means.
You can make a due pass, and we'll either refer it off the floor to Ways and Means or whatever the stage
right.
game. I think it's useful
right.
to try to do that. Okay.
Question.
Senator Brockman.
When did May get in there instead of shall? Originally, it started out to be shall, did it not? Whose idea was that?
Shall I respond? Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Brockman. That was added in the Dash 4 amendments, which were submitted to the committee at the last time the bill was up, and it was among the recommendations that were made by the Medical Association, although in later testimony, they indicated that they didn't like shall or may.
Well, they don't like the bill.
Each created problems, which they described.
This was, if I can take 15 seconds to expand upon that, I think the may was to protect against any liability if there is an inadvertent failure to notify by any healthcare providers. It puts us into another trap, I guess, as far as the OMA is concerned, because they are still wrestling with the notion of informed consent, and I don't think there's any way we can deal with that issue in this bill and still have a bill, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
So we've done all that we can do, I think.
Yeah. Senator Springer, now, do you, the A and Gross bill, we actually adopted all of those amendments, didn't we, in as
correct.
We did then. So the
That's
bill
correct.
Is before us intact. Senator Springer, want
yes.
to make a motion?
I would so move.
Senator Springer moves Senate Bill 389 as we've amended it to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Call the roll, please, Mark.
Senator Brockman.
Aye.
Senator Bunn.
Aye.
Senator Springer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hill.
Aye.
Chair Cohen.
No. Motion carried. Thank you very much.
Thank
Senator
you.
Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Now, let's go back to 3165. Mr. Marquis is here.
Yeah, I should say so.
I guess I managed to leave my name out. That's okay.
Well, we all know he's the father of this
measure. Statesman Journal is very happy with you.
Be careful.
Did it say we were absent or excused?
It
said we were absent.
Well, they said the trial lawyers were account for the delay. I didn't figure that out.
Mm. I think that wasn't the case either.
The trial lawyers were the ones who were absent.
All right. Oh, well, so 3165,
oh, well.
Mr. Marquis is here.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jim Marquis on behalf of Oregon Collectors Association. Apologize, I was out of the room when you called the bill earlier. 3165 is a bill that was introduced in this process at the request of the Oregon Collectors Association. Went through the House with, I believe, 57 aye votes, three people being absent. This bill deals with the Oregon version of the Unfair Debt Collection Practices Act, which is part of Chapter 646, the Unfair Trade Practices provisions in Oregon. If I could just briefly give you a little bit of history. In the early 80s, Congress adopted the Federal Unfair Debt Collection Practices Act. As the federal bill was originally introduced into Congress, it covered the collection of debts by anyone collecting a debt, and subsequently in that process, back in Washington, D.C., many, many people were exempted from the act, including banks, savings and loans, finance companies, and others, until when the federal law was adopted, it regulated collection agencies only. Subsequent to the adoption of the federal law, the state of Oregon adopted a law regulating the collection of debts by anyone collecting a debt in Oregon. But there was a an exemption to the act which simply said a debt collector did not mean anyone who was collecting from the maker of a check, draft, or order for the payment of money which had been dishonored. So that we have this kind of unusual situation in Oregon where we have a whole list of do's and don'ts in which you can't harass a debtor or call them at times known to be inconvenient to them and all sorts of other things, unless you happen to be trying to collect a bad check, in which case no rules apply. And to be quite candid with you, since collection agencies are regulated in the collection of bad checks under the federal law, they feel that everybody ought to be regulated, and so they've deleted that exemption. That is the simple thrust of House Bill 3165, to delete the exemption from the list of do's and don'ts when you're collecting on a bad check. We also have proposed amendments, 3165-1 amendments, which we would like the committee to consider adoption of. These provisions are contained in House Bill 3168, and quite frankly, this was my mix-up. I didn't get this bill heard in the House when I should have, and since this bill deals with the same general subject category, we'd like you to include the provisions of 3168 and 3165. If I could again explain, because collection agencies are regulated by the Federal Act, and they are also regulated by the State Act, they are the only people in Oregon who are regulated by both acts. And there is one somewhat glaring conflict between the federal law and the state law. If you look on page 2 of House Bill 3165, on line 14, you will see that a debt collector may telephone a debtor's place of employment without informing any other person of the nature of the call or identifying the caller as a debt collector. And that appears on lines 14 and 15 of page 2 on 3165. That is the present law in Oregon. The federal law, on the other hand, which also regulates collection agencies, says that if you are a collection agency regulated under the federal law and are calling any third person for locate information, you shall identify yourself and state that you are confirming or correcting location information concerning the consumer, and, if expressly requested, identify your employer. So if I'm a debt collector and I call an employer or someone else at the place of employment to find out if this debtor works there or to do other locate information, under the state law, I am absolutely prohibited from allowing anyone to know that I'm a debt collector. But under the federal law, if I'm calling that same person and somebody says, who do you work for, and I say ABC Collection Agency, obviously they're going to know I'm a debt collector. Then I must tell them who I work for, thereby complying with the federal law, and automatically I violate the state law. So we're sort of in this situation of, if we comply with the federal law, we violate the state law, and if we comply with the state law, we violate the federal law. Now, last session, I introduced a bill to try to conform the state law to the federal law in this area, and I met a rather substantial amount of resistance from members of the Bar Association and debtor-creditor section and others. So we have simply, this session and the debtor-creditor section of the state bar thought this was the proper way to proceed. We've simply said that if you are regulated by the federal law and are in compliance with the federal law, then you shall be deemed to be in compliance with the state law for these purposes. Mm-hmm. That concludes my remarks. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. There are questions, Mr. Markey.
No. I'm sure just a quick one.
Senator Hill.
Did they say that on the House side that they would concur with the amendments? Have you?
I don't think there's any problem with concurrence, as far as I know.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll publish the amendments. Anybody who has an interest, there's no one else signed up. We need to make sure that we have the amendments, I guess. For the moment, the chair would move the amendments dash 1 to House Bill 3165. Are there objections to those amendments? Hearing none, so order. Then we'll set it aside so that anybody who has
Madam Chair,
and interest to come back, flag it down with Bill Taylor and see if there's a problem with it.
Madam Chair, if I could, before I get off, Jim Markey again, I will say that I have discussed these amendments with legal aid, and I don't believe they have any problem, and I've also discussed them with the Oregon Bankers Association.
Well, they're all in the room, and they have an opportunity to let us know if they are objecting to this, to the bill or the amendments. Thank you very much. Representative Shipley is here. We're here to speak to House Bill 2708. So why don't you come out, Gail?
For the record, Gail Shibley, State Representative, District 12, Southeast and Southwest Portland.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today to testify on behalf of and lend my support to House Bill 2708. Frankly, I won't keep you long. I think you have some very able arguments in support of the bill from Oregon Advocacy Center and Oregon Legal Services. I believe you also got some folks who will be here to talk about why they think it's not a good idea, so you'll hear all sides of the argument. I was approached by Oregon Advocacy Center back in January, who had earlier been in contact with then State Rep. Phil Kiesling, as he was a member of Oregon Advocacy Center's Board of Directors. After several conversations with the group and looking at the proposal that they had wanted put into the legislative process, I wholeheartedly agreed to be the chief sponsor, and I believe 2708 Representative Kelly Clark and I are co-chief sponsors over in the House. This bill passed on the floor of the House 57-1.
That doesn't make much difference to those of us. We know how things happen. You know, we pass, you know, once it gets out of committee, people don't like it.